WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University. This is Current Sports.
Afternoon, ladies and gents. Yes, 1 o'clock is struck again, your favorite time of the day. Why? Because that means Current Sports is on your radio, baby. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. Another great show in store for you all as we recap the Tigers, who now find themselves in a situation of desperation. We'll also talk about three MSU athletes who recently got some pretty cool recognition for their outstanding play recently, and Lions center Dominic Raiola may be in a bit of trouble, folks. Let's update you on all of that right now. Here are your current sports headlines on this October 8th, 2013. All right, as we just said, the Tigers and A's, Brandon Moss, Josh Reddick, and Seth Smith homered for the Oakland Athletics, who chased Anibal Sanchez in the fifth inning Monday and defeated the Tigers 6-3 for a 2-1 AL Division Series lead. Now, the A's can close out the series today, 5 p.m., and reach the AL Championship Series for the first time since 2006, when they were swept by the Tigers. Now, Oakland will send rookie Dan Straley to the mound against Detroit's Doug Fister. Sanchez, the American League's ERA leader, allowed 6 runs, 5 earned, and 8 hits in 4 1/3 innings. Smith has homered off of Anibal more than any other player, folks, having done it twice in the regular season and twice in the postseason. Now, this is the fourth time in Sanchez's career that he allowed 3 home runs in a game, and he didn't allow multiple home runs in a game during the entire 2012 regular season. Yes, very uncharacteristic for Anibal Sanchez. Jim Leland said after the game that, quote, "Sometimes he starts out a little slow. You figure he's going to get it going. Today, he just really didn't get it going. He made a couple of real bad pitches the last inning he was out there to Moss and Smith." Now, Gerard Parker gave up 3 runs in 5 innings for Oakland, and the Tigers couldn't rally against the bullpen. In the bottom of the ninth, Grant Balfour and Victor Martinez also got into it. They cleared the entire Tigers bench and A's bench out there. If you haven't seen that, check out the highlight tape on that one, guys. But yes, the Tigers are in desperation mode, folks. 6-3 loss. Man, goodness. Well, we want to get your thoughts on that. 517-355-9527. We're going to be talking about the Tigers later on in the hour as Matt Luckey joins me to discuss that. All right, moving on. Darquez Dennard. I tell you what, Darquez Dennard is something else, folks. Now, if you remember, Dennard picked off Jake Ruddock twice as the Iowa quarterback was looking for receivers Don Shumpert and Damon Powell. Both times, Dennard grabbed the ball and got interception return yardage. Dennard's 2-interception game was the third of his career. The senior also achieved that at the 2012 Outback Bowl against Georgia, as well as earlier that season against Nebraska. Dennard has been named Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week for the Michigan State football team. He's unbelievable. Darquez Dennard definitely deserves it. The 5'11", 197-pound Dennard has 8 interceptions in his career. More great news from Spartan athletes. Lauren Wazinski, Michigan State senior Lauren Wazinski, has been named the Big Ten Volleyball Player of the Week. It is the third time this season that the outside hitter has captured the weekly honor, and second straight. Now, this week she shares the honor with Nebraska outside hitter Kelsey Robinson. Now, Wazinski and Robinson represent the sole unbeaten teams in Big Ten play, and Saturday will serve as a showcase for the Big Ten Co-Players of the Week when the Spartans host Nebraska at 7 p.m. at Jensen Fieldhouse. Now, Wazinski led all players in both matches last weekend in kills, hitting .517 on Friday with 18 kills in a sweep of Illinois. Now, on Saturday, she compiled 19 kills and hit .452 on a sweep of Northwestern. She's been unbelievable, folks. Now, the senior recently surpassed the 2,000 career kill mark and has a total of 2,112 after Illinois and Northwestern matches. She needs 143 more to move into the NCAA's top 25 all-time list. and 180 to become MSU's all-time kills leader. She is something else, folks. And Michigan State's men's soccer junior forward, Adam Montague, was named Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week, as announced by the conference office on Monday. Now, scoring his second game-winning goal in as many games, Montague bounced a header into the net in the final minute of a double overtime game to earn a win at number 5 Northwestern on Sunday, helping the Spartans improve to 7-1-1 on the season. Now, his 3.78 shots per game average also leads the conference. He also recorded an assist in the team's first Big Ten win of the season and the first road win over Northwestern since 2001. Now, this is the first Big Ten weekly honor for the Toledo, Ohio native, who has now scored 16 goals during his MSU career. All right, Michigan's Pipkins is out for the season. Michigan sophomore defensive tackle Andre Pipkins will miss the rest of the season following an ACL tear suffered against Minnesota on Saturday. Michigan coach Brady Hoke said in a news release, "You heard for Andre. And I really do because I coach him and he's in my meeting room every day. He was really starting to turn the corner on the field and become a productive football player for us. The good news is he's young. He's a great kid and he has a lot of great football ahead of him. We will help him get through this." Now, this is the second serious injury for Pipkins at Michigan. As a freshman, he suffered a neck injury during practice and was actually carried off the field in a stretcher. However, he returned to practice 3 days later and finished the season with appearances in each of Michigan's 13 games. So, man, that's definitely a big blow to Michigan right there. Dominic Raiola. Now, Detroit Lions lineman Dominic Raiola is alleged to have insulted the sexuality and physical appearance of some University of Wisconsin band members. Michael Lecarone, the director of bands at Wisconsin, told ESPN.com that the incident occurred just before the start of the national anthem in the end zone as the band was planning on finishing up its pregame performance. Now, the Wisconsin band travels once a year to perform at a Packers game. The Lions issued their statement before Swartz's news conference Monday, saying, quote, "We are aware of the reports involving Dominic Raiola and the University of Wisconsin marching band. Those reports are extremely inconsistent with the standard of behavior we expect from our players and from every member of our organization. We currently are gathering more information and will respond further when appropriate." Now, Raiola was fined $7,500 during the team's winless 2008 season when he made a gesture at Lions fans after a loss that dropped Detroit to 0-13. Now, in 2010, Raiola was fined $15,000 for a verbal altercation with a fan in Miami that also included an obscure jester. So this is not Dominic Raiola's first rodeo when it comes to stuff like this. If you want to read the details of that report, there's actually one of those students actually posted on their Facebook page the account of what he alleges Dominic said to him. Interesting stuff there. Look it up online. All right, Pistons and Maccabi Haifa. Yes, the new look Detroit Pistons are set to host their preseason opener tonight at the Palace of Auburn Hills versus Maccabi Haifa of the Israeli Super League. The Pistons, who acquired Brandon Jennings, Josh Smith, and Chauncey Billups in the offseason, finally enter a season with legitimate buzz after a five-year period of ineptitude. Now, new coach Maurice Cheeks and assistant Rasheed Wallace will make their debuts on the bench. Maccabi Haifa, one of the premier teams of the Israeli Super League, features a couple of former NCAA stars like Florida Gulf Coast, Sherwood Brown, and Illinois' Brian Randall. Tip-off is set for 7:30 p.m. I'm going to be glued to my TV for that because I'm a huge fan of the red, white, and blue. I'm a huge Pistons fan, folks. All right, M&F Monday Night Football. Let the Geno Smith Rookie of the Year talk begin, folks. Yes, the Jets rookie quarterback completed 80%. Yes, 80% of his passes and threw for 3 touchdowns in the Jets' thrilling 30-28 win in Atlanta. Nick Folk drilled a 43-yard field goal as the time expired to spoil a thrilling comeback attempt by the Falcons, who fell 1-4 to start the season. Now, Smith, who had 8 interceptions coming into the game, was turnover-free and didn't shy away from the big stage when the Falcons took a late 28-27 lead, marching his team down the field into Folk's kicking range. He did it with ease, folks. So, Geno Smith, look out for him. All right, Josh Freeman with the Vikes. Fresh off being run out of Tampa Bay, Josh Freeman is getting another shot in Minnesota, but just not yet. the newest Viking QB, will sit out this week, but Coach Leslie Frazier hinted at Freeman getting a chance to start once he becomes more familiar with the playbook. Now, Christian Ponder, an incumbent starter, is battling a broken rib and has really been overwhelmed so far this season. Freeman struggled mightily this season in Tampa Bay, completing just 46% of his passes before being released. Well, those are your current sports headlines on this October 8th, 2013. If you want to comment on any of those, you know that you can give us a call right here at Current Sports by dialing 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. I also want to remind you all to like Current Sports on Facebook by visiting facebook.com/currentsports and follow me on Twitter at Al Martin. WKAR. Well, let's get to our guest for today's show. He teaches at the University of Michigan and Northwestern School of Journalism and speaks nationwide on leadership and diversity. He has a new book entitled Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football. John Eubacon, thanks so much for joining me on today's Current Sports. How you doing, John?
Doing very well. Good to be back on.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for coming on. Now, let's go back in time real quick, John. How did you get involved with sports journalism, man?
By doing it.
Did you study it in college?
No, we don't have that at Michigan, unfortunately. No journalism degree is available. They had a great department until the 1970s when they killed it. But, Arthur Miller, Mike Wallace, quite a few guys had graduated from there, but they killed the program. So I was a history major and an English kind of minor, which is basically double pre-unemployment back in those days, probably still is now. Mm-hmm. But no, I just started doing it, and I just teach at Michigan and Northwestern on the side. It pays chump change. Trust me, I make my living doing this, which is writing books. So,
Gotcha.
That's been a lot of fun.
John, how did you – and you also were a writer for the Detroit News, right? Talk about that a little bit.
That's correct. I was there from 95 to 99 writing sports features, which is a great opportunity there, working for Bob Giles and Mark Lett and Jim Russ. Basically, I was a salaried freelancer. It was great. I'd fly out on Monday or Tuesday to someplace like Kentucky basketball or Green Bay football or somewhere in the state of Michigan, and come back on Wednesday and write it up, and on Sunday get a nice big feature in the Sunday Free Press and News. That was a fun job to have, to say the least, and I learned a lot. But left there in 99 to freelance for Time and ESPN and Sports Illustrated, New York Times, all those, and write books.
Now, what's the coolest sporting event you've ever covered, John? I know you actually covered the Winter Olympics of 1998 right in Nagano, Japan.
My man, you have done your homework.
Oh, yeah,
if you
I do.
Dig that one up from Nagano, Japan, the most probably forgotten Olympics of all time.
Yeah.
That's really impressive. But that was a lot of fun. That was pretty cool, actually. Boy, most exotic, Japanese hockey, Spanish bullfighting, Australian rules football in Melbourne, Australia. Those three probably take the cake. But as far as favorites go, man, you can't beat Big Ten football.
Not at all, huh? How is the sporting culture over there in Japan, John?
Very different. In Europe and in Asia generally, even Australia, the yelling and screaming that we're used to and I used to do. I was a high school hockey coach myself at Ann Arbor Huron High School. They don't do it over there. It's far more cooperative, far more less authoritative, I guess, authoritarian. But I confess that I'm as guilty as anybody in American sports of the old school kind of coaching. So that was a big difference over there.
Right. I can just imagine. Now, John, let's dig into your book now. Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football. Where did the inspiration come to write this book, John?
Good question. It came from the last book, actually, and that was Three and Out, the Rich Rodriguez and the Michigan Wolverines and the Crucible of College Football, where I spent 3 years embedded with the program at Michigan, which was complete access. You must never get this. It was locker rooms and team dinners and coaches' meetings and you name it. It was
wow, you could
cool.
sit in on coaches' meetings.
It was amazing.
That never happens today, John.
It really doesn't, but it happened again for this book, incredibly, with Penn State mainly. But I also got good access to Ohio State and Northwestern and in other ways at the University of Michigan as well. So that was the key. One of the keys from the last book was I realized that what I was seeing about Michigan is probably true of other schools as well, that the student-athlete part of the equation works better than expected. Other parts don't. I came away far more impressed, as a rule, by the players than by the people who run college football. I will say that Mark Hollis at Michigan State, I still believe, is one of the best athletic directors in the nation.
Yeah.
He's done a fantastic job up there, and with the right values, from everything I can see. I'm a huge Tom Izzo fan as well, so
there you go.
That is not uncommon, of course, amongst sports writers generally and fans as well. But no, they do a great job up there. I've got a very nice chapter in the book on Michigan State and how President Hanna, back in the 50s and 60s, leveraged football when they were winning national titles. Leveraged football to turn Michigan State from a 4,000-student Michigan State college into the 40,000-student Michigan State University, one of the top 50 research universities in the world. And that's President Hanna, but again, leveraging football. He apparently is still or was in Ripley's, believe it or not, for like not missing a game home or away for like 20 years.
Are you serious? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you dig that one up, John?
His daughter.
Wow. My
I tracked
goodness.
Her down in Washington, D.C., and she told me that one and showed me the thing. So that's how President Hanna did it, and it's a fun story up there, too, how they built Michigan State.
Wow. You know, John, I got to ask you, because like we just alluded to, you never see media access, you know, getting hands-on experience or being able to sit on coaches' meetings. You don't see that nowadays. How did you get this access, John? That's incredible.
Party dumb luck is the answer. The first time around is through a former student of mine at Culver Academy who became a financial advisor, whose colleague was Mike Wilcox, who was Rich Rodriguez's agent, basically, financial advisor and agent, and that got me in there. Mm-hmm. At Penn State, I was even dumber and luckier, I guess. Bill O'Brien, the head coach there, had read my couple books ago, I wrote Bo's Lasting Lessons with Bo Schembechler. Mm-hmm. He'd read it 3 or 4 times. And I really liked it a lot, and we had some mutual friends. We sat down, we hit it off. It really ultimately boils down to a comfortable fit and trust. And if you get Fourth and Long, the current book, you'll see that people at Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Notre Dame, and Northwestern all spoke very freely to me, which I think is clearly vital to any book. I mean, it can't just be the same old press releases. And they've all got strong opinions about where college football is going, especially the players. And no one really talks to the players or the fans. Mm-hmm. And this book we actually did, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, I'm talking with author of Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football, John Bacon. Now, John, you know, you talk about O'Brien, you know, sitting in on things at Penn State. Is the scandal at all, because today is on Current Sports, we're talking about the top five biggest sports scandals of all time. Was the scandal at Penn State talked about at all, or is that not even being focused on here in your book?
We got a chapter on Paterno's legacy, and that obviously includes Sandusky. You cannot ignore it. You cannot tell the story without it.
Mm-hmm.
The book largely picks up, though, from after Sandusky is arrested, after his court case. It's all mentioned again in the second chapter, I believe it is. And that's about, you know, 10 or 15 pages. But what I was most curious about is, if you're an 18 or 19 or 20-year-old kid on that team, and sanctions come down, and you can't go to the Big Ten title game, you can't go to a bowl game,
yeah, yeah,
and lose scholarships and all the rest, what do you do? Do you stay or do you go? And quite amazingly, these guys stayed, although I got to tell you that that program was so much closer to imploding and not even having a season last year than people know. It was really quite mind-blowing to learn all that.
Wow.
About half the underclassmen, within an hour of the sanctions coming down from Mark Emmert of the NCAA, about half the underclassmen told the seniors, we are all leaving, and we're probably going to take more of us with us, more of them with us.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, forget how bad your year might be. You don't have enough players to actually field a team to run practice. So at that point, you really just can't do the doggone thing. So Penn State was a lot closer to a collapse than people realize, and the job done by the coaching staff, Bill O'Brien, and the seniors especially, to save it all was really quite amazing. Keep in mind, too, those players didn't even know who Sandusky was until he was arrested.
Wow.
So it's obviously not on them.
That is interesting stuff there. Juicy stuff, man. Now, John, in the description of the book, it reads, quote, "This is the work of a writer in love with an old game, a game he sees is in grave danger." John, can you expound on what those dangers are?
Sure. I mean, on the one hand, you can say attendance is sky high nationwide. The TV ratings are great. The revenue is, you know, breaking records all over the place, the TV deals and so on. So on the one hand, it's very healthy. The other side is you can start to see some cracks that they might be pushing the whole thing to the breaking limit. Student attendance, for example, is a big cause for concern at Michigan and Michigan State, I believe.
Yeah, very. Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. So, and the problem there is not just, okay, the here and now, but those are your alums in 20 years. If they're not getting hooked now, they won't be hooked in 20 years. So that is clearly a concern for college football leaders. The other concern is, you know, the players also say enough. As Ron Warhurst, Michigan track coach, pointed out, one of these days, these guys are going to come out of the tunnel, run across the field, and sit down and not get up. And the second they do that, all power shifts. So I think if they push the players too far on how much money they're making off of them, I think that the players sooner or later will revolt. So I think we're getting to both a fan and a player revolt. Mm-hmm. At Penn State, before Sandusky, and I stress that, in 2010 and 2011, they lost 3,000 season ticket holders both years. And these are people who, you know, had 100,000 fans per game for six straight years after their latest expansion, and they drive an average of 4 hours to get there from Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Boston, New York, D.C., you name it. These are among the hardest core fans in the country, and you lost 3,000 in 2010. You lost 3,000 more in 2011 before Sandusky's arrested. Last year's team was beloved, and they lost about 4,000 or 5,000 more season ticket holders. The game I went to, the second game of the third game of the year, they had about 80,000 fans in a place that holds around 108.
My goodness.
Exactly. So that's not just the canaries in the coal mine. Those are the coal miners.
Right.
And people ought to watch out.
John, why do you think that is so? Why are these numbers decreasing each and every year?
I think it's a few reasons, and one is simply just the price of it has skyrocketed. It's gone out of control. My tickets on the 10-yard line at Michigan Stadium have increased by about 1,000% in the last about 15, 20 years. It's crazy.
Wow.
That's one reason. Second reason is, man, the TV timeouts and all the rest. You know, why am I paying that kind of money? And for a family of four to go to a game at Michigan costs around $500 for average seats, no hotels, no restaurants, $500. A day at Disney cost less, and Mickey, man, he never loses. So you got to think about that if you're planning a vacation. Are we going to Disney World or are we getting season tickets?
Exactly.
Those are your choices.
Good point, John.
And that's where it's becoming a tough choice after a while, especially if your kids aren't into it.
Yeah. So
that's one thing. The TV timeouts, man, I'm dropping big money, and I get to the stadium. They won't even show me the controversial instant replays because they're the only ones you want to watch. The guy at home, he's getting it. I'm getting 2 minutes of sitting in the cold listening to rock music or whatever, not even the band anymore. Why am I doing this? You know, people start to ask the question. And Michigan, if they've got a wait list, boy, it doesn't seem like it. You know, Michigan used to have 10, 20,000 on the wait list. I think that's pretty much gone. So that's another reason. I think also that if you didn't grow up on it, that's a factor as well on your enjoyment of it. So as they've got more options, cell phones, video games, and so on, that's going to be an issue for any program, obviously.
Wow.
So I think those are the reasons why. On top of all that, when you start moving around the kickoff times from 12 to 1 to 3 to 5 to 8, it's like moving around. Look, man, your show's on every afternoon, right? You don't bounce around the
Not
time because you'll lose your fans.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what's happening. So that's another reason why. So a lot of options start becoming a lot more appealing. And let's face it, man, the HD TVs have never been better.
I just wanted to ask you about it because TV now has become so good with HD TV. You can record games now. I mean, the experience at home, in many ways, you can argue, has become almost as good as possibly an experience where you're there at the game. I mean, that's got to be a huge, huge competition factor in this whole discussion.
I think you nailed it. No question about it. And on top of that, I mean, Don Cannon, Michigan's legendary AD, on a list with Biggie Munn, I would say, at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
He had the very clever idea that you don't market these games to men. You already got them, chances are. You market them to the wives. If the wives like the idea, then the men will come and so will the kids.
Right.
And I got news for you. Wives aren't that fond of the bathrooms they have at Spartan Stadium or at Michigan Stadium.
The
bathrooms at home are a lot nicer. That's not the only reason they go to games, obviously, or, you know, are into it. I know plenty of hardcore female football fans, and I'm sure you do too.
Yeah.
But that is a factor, man. You can't ignore it.
It's a factor. It definitely is. It definitely is, John. Now, John, in what ways, both good and bad, is college football changing and evolving?
Most of the changes are probably for the worse. What we love about college football is that it's traditional, man. I mean, the game you're watching in East Lansing is very similar to the game that Duffy Doherty, Biggie Munn, go on back. That your fathers and grandfathers all cheered on. The rivalries never change. That's one of the biggest things, and that's one of my friend said in the book, Jason Conte. He said, man, a national title, that's as mythical as a unicorn. Who cares? Mm-hmm. He said, what college football is regional rivalries that go back a century, and it's the night before the Michigan-Michigan State game. He said, man, I don't care if Alabama wins the national title again, and of course they did. All I care about is if Michigan wins by 3 points over Michigan State tomorrow. And, of course, the final score was 12-10. on paper, you'd have to say it was a dog of a game. It was 13 penalties, one touchdown, you know, a handful of turnovers. It was not great football on either side.
Right.
And Michigan wins without a touchdown, which is kind of crazy,
right,
four field goals. And yet the fans rushed the field, and they wouldn't East Lansing, too. Because why? It was a rivalry that went back a century that your parents and grandparents are all part of. So what's great about college football, what you're really selling is passion and tradition. The Spartans and the Wolverines at their best cannot be the Lions at their worst. And let's face it, we know a lot about the Lions being at their worst.
Oh, yeah. I can write a book on that one, John, right?
Exactly. Well, the problem is no one's going to buy it.
Right. That's the problem, yeah. I just saved my time,
right? No one wants to read about losers. But, yes, you've been around this block. You know too well what's going on.
Yeah.
So we're not cheering prowess. We're not cheering excellence. We're cheering passion, identity, connection, tradition. That's what we care about, Michigan-Michigan State. And what threatens it are all those things that threaten that rivalry. I mean, Michigan played Minnesota for 99 straight years for the Brown Jug,
mm-hmm.
And they broke it in the late 90s due to you know, Penn State joining the Big Ten. You got to take some breaks. And now, with Michigan and Michigan State going to be in the Eastern Division of the Big Ten, Michigan might not play Minnesota for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, a long time, yeah.
So that's going to matter. Now, luckily for Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, they're all in the same division, so those rivalries will continue. But then you add Maryland and Rutgers, and Michigan and Michigan State will not face Illinois or Iowa or Minnesota for years. What do Big Ten fans care about Maryland or Rutgers?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I said
what
the same
fans
thing. Yeah.
Were consulted? What fans were consulted? What players were consulted? Those college football is the players. It is the fans. And yet they're the people that no one ever talks to when they make these colossal decisions. And in this book, we do.
I love that, John. What do you hope people will take away from your book?
What's great about college football and why we need to protect it. To me, it's like a national park. It grew organically, naturally, over a century. And if we end up cheaping it up for souvenirs, it'll become Niagara Falls instead of being Grand Canyon. So let's save it while we can.
There you go. John, how can people get it before I let you go?
Sure. Schuler's Books in Lansing, and I'll be there on November 6th,
yeah,
which is a Wednesday, I believe, if I'm looking at that correctly. Wednesday, November 6th, 7 o'clock, I'll be in Schuler's. But in the meantime, Amazon also sells it. Local bookstores in Lansing, johneubacon.com, and Barnes & Noble.
There you have it, John Eubacon. John, thanks so much for joining me, bud.
Hey, thank you as always. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, John. All right, well, when we return to current sports, we're going to be taking your calls on sports scandals. Yes, we have a special Top 5 Tuesday for you all, where we will list the top 5 worst sports scandals of all time. What does your list look like? Call us, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. More current sports is coming right back.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, actor Tom Hanks asked the real Captain Phillips, who was captured by Somali pirates, how best to play him.
I told him if he wasn't going to play me, he'd have to put on a little weight and get a little better looking. And he didn't either, so he didn't do anything I told him to.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm WKAR's Emmanuel Berry, host of Current State Weekend. Spend your weekends with me as I highlight current state weekday stories and explore mid-Michigan's vibrant arts and culture scene. We'll cover from the latest at Wharton Center to the diverse individuals that make Michigan's creative sector sing. It's Current State Weekend, Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at 1 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished talking with John Eubacon, author of Fourth and Long. Very, very good book. Just hit the shelves. It talks about the fight for the soul of college football. John, such a great interview there. He'll be in Lansing on November 6th. That's a Wednesday, promoting that book. So look out for that. All right. Well, it's our fall membership campaign at WKAR. Time for you to make your investment in Current Sports on this public radio station. Make your call now at 517-353-5000 or use the Give Now link at WKAR.org.
Al, you know, yesterday was laundry day, as is usual.
Oh, and, man, I hate that day.
You know, I'm looking through my dirty clothes, and what do I find? Mm-hmm. A crisp $10 bill.
Get out of here. Really?
Crisp
$10
bill.
You are one lucky brother.
Always.
Wow.
And, you know, that's a great thing to have, and you know what I was thinking I could do with it? I could donate it to WKAR.
Right.
Because I do that once a month. I apply for the Evergreen membership, $120 a year, $10 a month. Not only do I support great public radio here at WKAR, but I also receive a member card.
A member card as well. I get a member card with that too.
You do. You get benefits at various restaurants, stores around the area. I can get free sandwiches. I get 2-for-1s just about anywhere I can think of.
Right.
I'm eating well for the next year.
Yes, you are, brother. That's, man.
Thanks
you're a skinny
my,
guy. You
thanks
need
to
this.
My dirty laundry money. Thanks right. to my dirty laundry money, I now have 2-for-1 deals anywhere I want.
That's great stuff, man. And you know what? I do that all the time, too. When laundry day comes, even coming home from a long day at work, you know, you empty out your wallet. I look in my pockets, and I pull out lint and change.
Right.
And that change could go to WKAR. Give them that number one more time.
Right.
Man.
All you guys need to do, call 517-353-5000 or visit our website at WKAR.org. Start putting that loose pocket change to good use.
Very, very. Again, we're doing this for the entire week, folks. You make this show possible. You make what we do possible. And if you love us here at WKAR, please, we would love to have your donation. Because you know what? It's comforting to belong to a group. You know, even when you're among strangers, the moment you spot someone else wearing your favorite team's ball cap or sweatshirt or your alma mater, it's an instant feeling of kinship. It's a family here at WKAR. And we want you to be a part of that family. Together, you, with other contributing listeners, make a real difference in keeping this service alive and well at AM 870. When you run into fellow WKAR members, you know that you share similar core values and a responsibility to support the programming you enjoy. Please become a part of this important group, this family here at WKAR. 517-353-5000.
All right, Al. I beat you in fantasy before.
Oh my
I'm beating
gosh.
Everybody in fantasy.
Yes,
and it's got me thinking maybe, you know, because I love to brag.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe nothing
like
more.
It's when I'm winning, I love to brag too. Yeah, we
you
all
got,
brag.
You got to live it up while you're on top. And one of the things I'm thinking about doing, maybe applying for a WKAR Day sponsorship.
Right.
You get a 30-word message that is read 3 times in a day by our
three
own
times.
Mark Schwitzgable, maybe Jody Knoll. Just and you know,
wow.
Most people use it for anniversaries or birthdays, but I don't think it's limited to that.
Okay.
Maybe I have it to commemorate my fantasy football dominance over you. Maybe 3 times a day they come on the air and call out Al Martin and say, Al,
no.
What were you doing last week?
Yeah. That you know that'd
you got
be hilarious.
Stomped. Only $18 a month. I can have my trash talking done by the great folks here at WKAR.
You know, that would be a very creative way to trash talk, and I would commend you for doing that. I wouldn't be salty if you did that. I would be impressed.
I am seriously considering doing it, because now that I say it, it's a pretty great idea.
That's a very good
all
idea.
You guys got to do out there is call 517-353-5000 or go to WKAR.org and broadcast your trash talk through WKAR.
I love that. That's a sporty way to do it, too, man. You know, we trash talk a lot here on Current Sports, and you beat me without a kicker. Without a kicker, man, that's just, I want to just bury my head in the sand for that one, man. But, yeah, that's a great way to do it. And you know what? You know, if you have, you know, a honey on the side, you know, that you love, you're really digging her, and you want to impress her, and she loves NPR, and she listens to Current Sports. I know what girl doesn't listen to Current Sports, you know what I mean? We're
it's
great.
It's true.
You know what I mean? You know, if you want to impress her, send a message 3 times a day.
3 times a day.
You can say, hey, boo-boo, I love you.
She missed the morning shift. It's okay.
Right.
Because we're going to get that lunchtime shout out too. It's not just once.
Not just once. Not just twice.
Three times.
But three times.
Three different
three
times.
Three times a charm, baby. And she will love you. do that, fellas. We're like hitch here on Current
She's
Sports,
definitely going to love you more. That's for sure.
Yeah, oh, yeah, without a doubt. So one more time, Matt. What's that number, man?
517-353-5000 or visit our website at WKAR.org. We appreciate every donation we get.
Yes, we do. We love you guys out there. All right. Well, let's get back to the show now. As always, it's Tuesday, and every Tuesday morning on game day, MSU football coach Mark D'Antonio, of course, addresses the media. Of course, Michigan State, they have Indiana coming into town this weekend. Indiana looking pretty good. They had a huge, coming off a pretty big win that really shocked me. I tell you that, over Penn State, I believe, right, this past weekend.
The first time they've ever beaten Penn State.
Yeah, first time. That's unbelievable there. I believe Penn State will be playing Michigan this weekend. That should be an interesting matchup there. But, yeah, Indiana, they're 3-2, 1-0 in the Big Ten. Of course, Michigan State has also started off the Big Ten season undefeated. And Mark D'Antonio, he addressed the media today, and here he is talking about that outstanding MSU defense.
You evaluate our defense at the end of the year, not in the middle, because you really don't know what's going to happen. You know, the sky was falling when they scored two touchdowns last week. You know, that's a good sign. You know, they scored two touchdowns, and oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? You know, and I do believe this is an excellent defense that we have. I do believe that there's a lot of pride there. Based on things statistically right now, we're playing extremely well. But the key is, do you play well against every football team that you play against, I think, because every football team that you play against is going to bring a little bit different mentality or concept or the way they do things to you. So you have to be able to adjust every single week. You know, this week is going to be different than next week. It's going to be different than Illinois. It's going to be different than the following week. So, you know, the ability to adapt and change as you move forward in your schedule, I think, is key to your success. Thus far, we've been able to do that. I think we did that last year as well. But, you know, the 2011 team had 49 sacks.
Yes, that defense is always outstanding, ranking among the top in the nation, arguably the best defense in the nation, to tell you the truth. Again, Darquez Denard was named the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week. He was outstanding this past weekend. And talking about the offense for just a sec, in case you all were, you know, still out there chattering about the MSU quarterback situation, I thought Connor Cook did a very, very nice job this past weekend. D'Antonio, I think we can finally put this, you know, this question to bed. Here he was talking about the quarterback situation.
I think right now we're going to go with one quarterback, and that's how I feel. I feel like Connor played well this last game. We're asking our quarterback to create. I think he created. I thought he threw the ball very effectively. Ball was caught effectively down the field. And, you know, he had a couple runs, and he's a threat to run. So with that in mind, you know, I think we'll just go with that direction here. And I was impressed with the way he played last week.
Yeah, I was too, Coach D. And I tell you what, folks out there, I think, you know, we can finally. Matt, can we finally just put this thing to bed and say Connor Cook's the guy?
I think it's safe to say.
It's done.
Yep, it's over. And thank goodness, because that was the narrative following the team. You know, the offense is terrible. When are they going to find the guy? Now we can start talking about something else. Start talking about, you know, after a road win in the Big Ten and starting out 1-0, you know, expectations go back from, oh, man, we're going to struggle all year to, man, we are right in the thick of it in our division. And right. We absolutely are. I mean, it's anybody's race. You know, Michigan, Northwestern, Nebraska, and Michigan State. It's a four-horse race, and it's going to be a battle right down to the wire.
It is. It's definitely fun to watch. And, yeah, you know, during, you know, I was at D'Antonio's presser this morning, and, you know, throughout the entire press conference, I mean, it was funny. It was ironic because most of the press conference talked about, you know, the outstanding defense that MSU had. I mean, a lot of that press conference was not spent on, you know, the offensive end of things and talking about the quarterback. And Joe Rexroad had a funny question to Mark, just talking about, hey, Mark, can you remember the last time where you really didn't address the offensive situation? And he kind of chuckled and said, I can't remember. And that was one of those press conferences. And it's a good sign for them. Great as far as confidence goes for this team. I think, you know, coming off a win like they had over Iowa, and then the defense played outstanding again. Darquez Denard with the interceptions. And overall, great play from this team. From a conference perspective, playing a team like Indiana, who's really feeling good, coming off a big win against Penn State, feeling good about their shots in this whole race, conference race. It does a lot for Michigan State, confidence-wise. And, you know, they have a collective mindset that, you know, they're kind of calm now. They're kind of calm. But you still gotta bring it. You can still kind of have that chip on the shoulder, which MSU always has been notoriously known for. So, and also, Kathy George, I tell you what. This MSU volleyball team is unbelievable. They are among the top teams in the nation now. The new volleyball rankings came out, and I know they were ranked number 9 coming in 2 last weekend. I think some reports have them up to, I believe, 5. We're going to double-check that in just a sec. But Kathy George has this team rolling. Lauren Wozinski, as we mentioned at the top of the show, she has been named now back-to-back Big Ten player, volleyball player of the week. Can you believe that? She's unbelievable. I think she will possibly go on to break that kill record in MSU volleyball history. But here's Kathy George. She addressed the media before D'Antonio took the podium.
Look at an Iowa who might be towards the bottom of that, but they are a feisty team, and they play real hard, and they force you to be patient and to be strong and to be disciplined throughout your game. Nebraska is, you know, they have a different team this year. They have 2 transfers, one which is a senior, and she came to them from Tennessee. Both of them came from Tennessee. One is a 3-time All-American, and so she's in her 4th year, just joined the Cornhuskers this spring, and the setter as well. So she's setting, and the other one's outside hitter, but she's a crafty player, trained with the national team this summer. We've got our work cut out for us, and of course we have homecoming on Saturday night, but also turn around and then have that match, that big matchup in the evening at 7. So looking forward to this weekend. I think it's going to be a fun one. I know we're working really hard to get ready for great matchups.
Yeah, it should be a fun weekend, a big weekend for the Michigan State volleyball team. Again, Nebraska and Michigan State, 2 of the best teams in the nation. I'm looking right now on the at the volleyball rankings nationally. Nebraska is listed as number 7 in the nation. MSU ranked number 9. This is going to be a showdown to remember, folks. You don't want to miss that one. Wow. So yeah, every time, I mean, and even the MSU soccer team. I mean, the MSU soccer team making some noise now.
Everybody's bringing it strong this year.
Yes, they are. And Adam Montague, he was named, Big Ten Player of the Week as well. He's been great. You know, he had that game winner over Northwestern this past weekend. I mean, yeah, everybody is really bringing it in the land of Sparty. It's a great day to be a Spartan, I guess you can say, right?
For sure.
Crazy stuff there. And also, you know, we didn't yesterday get to some of our high school football, some of the notable scores from Friday. Of course, Alex Sharg was in here. He was at the Holt and Lansing Sexton football game, in which Holt just really they lost to Sexton in really a blowout there. It's supposed to be our game of the week. But just, you know, update you on some other scores that happened last week Friday. Lansing Everett topped East Lansing 25-17. Howell beat Milford 29-7. As I go on here, Bath and Langsburg. Bath tops Langsburg 20-19. Dansville and Potterville. Dansville tops Potterville 26-19. Fowler and Fulton. Fowler wins that one 21-14. Pomona Westphalia. Oh, man, they just walk all over Saranac 61-0. No, I'm not kidding, folks. Ithaca. There's another day at the office for Ithaca. 49-6 over Saginaw Valley Lutheran.
I mean, not only do they win, they beat everybody by like 40.
Exactly. It's unbelievable how they just go out there and just rack on points.
My goodness.
That's unbelievable, man. They are the top ranked, of course, Division 6 football team in the entire state of Michigan. Their team is just so good, man. I like to see them play the Lions. They're that good, man.
At least the Jags.
Yeah,
they have a chance against the Jaguars.
did you see? I don't know, folks, if you've seen the point spread for the Jags and Broncos, but it ties the record for the largest point spread in the history of NFL at -28. Yep. Can you believe that?
That's insanity. Oh. And I think that's what we're going to do for picks this week. It's going to be with the spread for that game, just because
game.
Everybody's going to pick Broncos anyway.
Without a doubt.
Let's make it interesting.
Yeah, we know the Broncos are going to win. The question is just how much. You know, will they cover? I don't know. That's unbelievable there. But yeah, Ithaca is like the Broncos of high school football in Michigan here. They're unbelievable. 49-6 again over Saginaw Lutheran. Portland tops Williamston 43-22. Grand Lash top Lansing Eastern 44-14. And we'll throw out one more for you. DeWitt and St. John's. DeWitt tops St. John's 48 20. So, yeah, big week there. Again, we thought Holton and Sexton was going to be the big game there. I mean, two teams that were previously in the CAAC Blue undefeated. You know, Holt looking really, really good, but Sexton looking better. So, and Dan Bogan, Alex talked to Dan Bogan after that game. Here was Dan after that game.
They worked so hard, and I can't say enough about the whole team, offense, defense, and special teams. We came prepared out to a very hostile, very good Holt team, and we played our butts off. Execution was great today. I think offensive line, running backs, receivers, everybody, they just played a great job, did a great job. The defense, they continued to play great tonight, and coaches did a great job. I'm just so proud of all our guys, and now we got to get ready for a tough East Lansing team.
Yes, they take on East Lansing this Friday. That was head coach of Lansing Sexton, Dan Bogan. His team is now 6-0 overall, sitting at first place in the CAAC Blue. 48-7 was that final again over Holt that last Friday. Javon Ray, he was great. Ty Glover had a decent game for Holt, but I tell you what, man, that Sexton team is just, at one point it was 25-0, and you just kind of just sensed that they might just run away with it, which they did. So, yeah, so there you have it there. Well, let's kind of transition really quick, just really briefly. Tigers and A's, Matt, man, they're on the, you know what, I think we might have called that wrong. It's a 5-game series.
Yep.
And I think we got it wrong when we initially called it, I believe, so I can't remember. I think
we ended up just, you and Alex took the Tigers in 4.
Okay, gotcha. That's
I
what
I took
happened.
The Tigers in 5.
And you took them in 5. So we did get the game amount of games right.
But
okay.
Everybody is looking...
not good.
It's bleak.
It's very bleak.
For us and the Tigers.
Yeah, you know what? Yesterday really surprised me as far as, you know, Sanchez just getting hit on like that. Man, you know, the Tigers bullpen the Tigers starting pitching has been great this entire season. It's what they do.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's what they do, and it's not what they did yesterday. Sanchez didn't look like himself, uncharacteristic of him. You know, they got hits here and there. But I tell you what, when Miguel Cabrera hasn't been Miguel Cabrera ever since that injury happened, you can tell it's bothering him.
Right.
And I think, you know, when a guy like Miguel Cabrera, who's such an emotional leader, he kind of rallies batters, I think. You know, when he's out there and doing extraordinary stuff like that, it rallies guys like a Torrey Hunter and Austin. You know, I could go on and on. It kind of rallies the team in a way. And with them struggling, I think it's kind of took effect on this team. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I watched the highlights of that game, and that's kind of the feeling that I'm sensing from
right.
this right
and
now.
And I don't think you're wrong. And, you know, 6 runs in the last 3 games. They're averaging 2 runs a game, and that was over their last 10 of the regular season too. So clearly the bats have gone cold.
Freezing.
And it's tougher than people think to just flip that switch and turn them back on. You know, we kind of hinted at it when the season wound down and they got no hit by the Marlins. Not a great omen going right into the playoffs, especially when you have to play a team like the A's.
Yeah.
I mean, Torrey Hunter is the only guy who has a history of success against today's starter for the A's, Dan Straley.
Yeah, Dan Straley,
he's
yeah.
7-10. Straley pitched great down the stretch. He went 4-1 in his last 6 games with a 2.0 ERA. Not going to be easy for the Tigers' bats to get going tonight.
No.
You know, somebody has to do it. It's got to be somebody other than Cabrera.
Yeah.
I think, at least. I don't think they're going to give him the chance to do it as far
right.
as giving him pitches to hit. And I just don't know if he's healthy enough to do it anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, Miggy's not fully healthy. And, you know, just having Miguel Cabrera, a healthy Miguel Cabrera in the lineup, it does a lot for the psyche of this Detroit Tigers team. And right now, I think that psyche's kind of shot. Again, they're on the brink of elimination now. Doug Fister's on the mound. Doug Fister, a guy, he's trying to, you know, he's going to try and frustrate this A's the A's batters, but you know, we're going to see. It's only time
right.
will tell. But this is not a good position that you want to be in. The bullpen has to step up as well. You know, once Fister comes out the game, you got to have a consistent play from your bullpen. Something that's been iffy a little bit throughout the season. It has to show up today. But I really and you know, Prince Fielder's another guy.
I think he's the main guy.
Yeah, he's the guy. He's got
$200 million contract.
Exactly. You got to step up, man.
You got to play better when it counts, and it counts right now.
He's been terrible, historically terrible in the playoffs.
Right.
You cannot do that in this moment today. He has to bring it, if anybody. If there's any better, I'm going to be looking at tonight, today at 5, it's him. Because he has to – you're paying this guy boatloads of money. Boatloads of money, rich as can be. You got to go out there and perform when it matters. And so far, Prince, historically, even going back, you know, his days back in the day with other teams, he has not been great in the postseason at all.
Yeah, and, you know, you get a game like they got game two from Verlander, and you don't win.
Right.
That's huge. And now, you know, now the pressure's definitely on the hitters to get things going because, you know, that was a golden opportunity to, you know, to win two in Oakland.
Yep, two in Oakland,
and
man.
And they blew it. And then Oakland came out and really took control of the series yesterday.
Right. That's a great point because, yeah, I mean, Justin Verlander looks like the Justin Verlander of old.
Right.
He was unbelievable.
Struggled all season.
Right.
Comes out in the playoffs. He's same old JV again.
Right.
You know, it's classic vintage Verlander, but, you know, it's a team game.
You got to take advantage of opportunities like that. Anytime Justin Verlander goes out there and deals like he did this past weekend,
you have to win.
You got
to
win.
You have to win.
You have to win. And, you know, I don't want to throw it in the air, but I don't know if Detroit's going to win this, man. I don't know. I got a bad feeling about
it. It's not looking great.
I got a bad feeling about it, you know. So, yeah, give us your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527. Again, the Tigers on the brink of elimination, folks, in this year's postseason. 5:07, first pitch time. Tigers and A's at Comerica Park. It's going to be interesting, to say the least. All right, well, let's take a quick break and come right back. We still have more to talk about. Again, we have a special Top 5 Tuesday for you all, the top five sports scandals of all time. Call us at 517-355-9527. Give us your thoughts on some that you recall. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports is coming right back at you.
On the next Fresh Air, Elizabeth Smart talks about surviving her 9-month ordeal after she was kidnapped from her bedroom when she was 14 by a man who saw himself as a prophet and wanted her as his second wife. He repeatedly raped her. Her story remained in the news until his capture. Now she has a foundation dedicated to preventing child abuse, and she has a memoir. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, you know that we're doing our fall pledge campaign here at WKAR, and we encourage you who make this show possible, you who make this station possible, we want to encourage you to give us a call here or visit WKAR.org and donate to us, because without you, we are nothing, and we appreciate any donation that you can give us, whether it's a penny, a quarter, nickel, a dollar, it doesn't matter. We value every single donation here at WKAR, and, you know, we encourage it.
Al, you know, some of my favorite times of the day are my commute. And it sounds a little strange because a lot of people think commute's traffic, anger. You know, there's a nice flow chart there from, you know,
it all relates.
Getting stuck in traffic and getting angry. But one of the best parts about it is that I get a chance to catch up on things to listen to. And one of the things you can listen to is podcasts from WKAR. Maybe you're listening to Current Sports on your drive home from work. You missed the show at 1.
I hope.
Had a busy meeting. Catch up with us later in the day. Download it from our website and go from there. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Oh, yeah.
You catch up on all your news, all your talk shows, anything you want, even some classical music, you can do that too. You know, if you are looking to contribute to an organization that will use your resources the right way and help us build up our station, go ahead, pick up the phone, call 517-353-5000 or visit our website at WKAR.org.
Yes, it's so simple, folks. Again, we value anything that you can give us here. Again, that number is 517-353-5000. We really appreciate it, folks. You make Current Sports happen. And without you, we are nothing. So again, that number is 517-353-5000 or give online at WKAR.org. A huge thanks to each and every one of you out there who listen and tune in each and every day. All right, well, we have a special Top 5 Tuesday for you all, as we've been promoting throughout the entire show. The top five sports scandals of all time. Yes, juicy stuff. We had John Bacon, author of fourth and long, talking about college football, and talked about Penn State and, you know, the whole scandal there. You can catch that book. But, yeah, you know, there's so many of them. And I tell you what, you know, I thought about this, Matt, because I'm a huge Scandal fan now with Kerry Washington.
Right.
I love the show. It's turned up to another level now, and I'm kind of hooked. And I was like, you know what? Sports scandals, and it hit me. You know what I mean? I kind of put it in the notes. So it's an interesting.
Kerry Washington inspired top five Tuesdays.
Kerry Washington. I have a crush on Kerry Washington.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing. She. Okay, let's stop. Go ahead.
Let's get to the list. All right. Now, Al, I've only got one doping scandal.
Okay.
I was pretty proud of myself for that.
Just one.
Limited myself to one.
Okay.
Start out number five. I think, you know, probably the most famous scandal in the history of sports. It's the Black Sox 1919 World Series.
Of course.
Eight players threw games for money from gamblers. You know, a huge. Anytime you hear about the White Sox franchise, inevitably you're going to hear about the Black Sox and Black Sox
scandal.
Without
a doubt. And that goes back so far.
I mean, that's ingrained
in sports.
Exactly. That's baseball history right there.
Yeah.
Number four, Baylor basketball. Patrick Dennehy murdered by teammate Carlton Dotson. Coach Dave Bliss tries to cover things up. Everything gets messy with the NCAA. Bliss ends up losing his job, rightfully so. Carlton Dotson charged, of course, with the crime. Really set Baylor basketball back for a while, although they bounced back pretty successfully at the end of this decade. Because
and what
year was
that?
2003 that this went down.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Big story.
I don't know, I remember that.
Yeah, people forget so quickly.
Wow. I was a junior in high school. I remember that. Wow.
Huge story.
Crazy.
Number three, Lance Armstrong. I don't think need to refresh anyone's memory about that. The guy now seems like a pretty huge monster, mm-hmm. you know, after being beloved for years as, you know, cancer survivor, Tour de France champion.
Yeah, and I have Lance on my list as well. And, you know, it really disturbed me just how, because, you know, in sports, you know, I feel like athletes kind of get so high on their horse that they think they're invincible.
Right.
And it just, the entire interview with Oprah just makes him seem like the biggest, you know, piece of crap that you could ever
imagine.
Exactly.
But it's because they fight these things with such conviction because they're protecting, you know, their brand, their livelihood,
right,
their reputation, and it just makes it look so much worse when inevitably they get proved wrong anyway.
Without,
you know,
a doubt.
it's bad for them. It's bad for everybody. It's bad for sports, really.
Yeah.
Number two, this one I learned about today. It is a 20-year horse murder scandal.
Horse murder.
From the mid-70s to the mid-90s.
20 years? Just 20 killing
years,
horses?
Rich horse owners would insure their horses for, you know, against injury or death. The horses would underperform. The owners see that they're losing money on a certain horse, hire an outside party to come in.
And like a horse hitman.
More or less, yeah.
Oh,
to come in, take care of the horse so they can collect the insurance money. One of the daughters.
Wow.
Of one of the horse owner murderer people, Lisa Druck, now known as Riel Hunter, she was actually involved. She had an affair with the U.S. vice presidential candidate, John Edwards.
Okay, so this is like an episode of Scandal.
It really is
okay.
an episode of Scandal. It probably was, you know, the genesis of Scandal, you know, just as an idea. That was it. This
right.
is these horse
there you
murders.
Go.
It's
there
crazy.
You go. Oh, my God.
Number one, Jerry Sandusky in Penn State. You know,
it was the sickest scandal.
That and just like the history of Joe Paterno, Penn State's program in general.
Right.
Huge story, obviously. You know, terrible story with what happened. That's got to be number one for me.
It definitely Penn State definitely made number one on my list as well. Just a really sick man right there, and he deserves to be in jail and to rot in there. But yeah, Penn State's number one for me. The Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan story, definitely stuck out to me back in the 90s, of course. Man, hiring someone to just take her out after practice, just walking in a dark alley and the guy takes off. Cobo Hall in Detroit, Michigan, that happened. Yeah, a lot of people forget that. Of course, Tiger Woods, y'all.
Mm.
Tiger got a little promiscuous.
A
lot, right? Okay, a lot. Very Yeesh. Promiscuous guy. You know, and that whole thing popped off. Everyone looked at Tiger as the golden child. He does nothing wrong. And
right.
Then,
what a fun Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I remember that happened. Oh, my goodness. Crazy. OJ. Can't leave OJ off your list. OJ Simpson, if it doesn't fit, you must quit. O.J. Simpson and Lance Armstrong definitely made my list as well. So there you have it, the top five sports scandals of all time. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky. Engineer Aaron Young. Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to John U. Bacon for joining me today. You listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.